We are live. All right.
Good morning, everyone. This is Commissioner Brian Kalk. We're meeting on the 12th floor of the Capitol today. It is Wednesday, December 4th, 2013, approximately 10 a.m. We're meeting for our regularly scheduled commission meeting. I don't really have any opening comments, except I would just take official notice of Commissioner Randy Crispin's tie. You notice he has a big buck on it, and I have to report that he won the big buck contest. So year one goes to Commissioner Crispin. We'll see what next year brings. And also, Commissioner Crispin and Commissioner Fedorchak have informed me that there has been a coup, that our next official meeting, we will be announcing our New Year's Eve resolutions, reinstating a previously long-held tradition of the Public Service Commission. So with that, I turn it over to my colleagues.
Well, you took actually the most important thing I wanted probably to talk about, and that was the deer thing. This is not a picture of the deer I got this year. That would have to go on this thinner part of the tie. But most importantly, although it's not this good of one, most importantly, it was bigger than the one Commissioner Kalk brought home. So that was the important thing. I also wanted, though, to seriously highlight some work. I don't know if everyone is aware, but while we have some people in the room, to highlight our licensing people. It's about a week and a half now. I believe it was a week ago Friday when we reached settlement on the Anderson case, and I just wanted to report to everybody the paperwork has been filed in district court in Fargo on that case, and the findings have been sent out to the producers. And so that hearing will be before the judge, I believe it's January 6th, and see if there's any protests or anything to it. But while these things never have, you know, completely happy endings, I think that the commission staff and the commission did the best job possible to clean up a mess, and we're moving forward with it. That's
thanks,
all.
Commissioner Fedorchak?
I would report yesterday was supposed to go to Wimbledon, North Dakota, to see the pig launching process for the Alliance, massive Alliance pipelines, high-pressure gas line through North Dakota. They once every 5 years do an inline test with their pig. And we were supposed to go yesterday, but the weather kept us from doing that. We stayed here. The pig was still launched. It'll travel down 240 miles through that pipeline into Minnesota and take 36 hours to get there. It's a really fascinating process. They did come into the office and do a presentation to the staff and to those who could attend, and it's really fascinating what they can find out by those huge pigs. This pig was about 6 feet long and 36 inches in diameter fit through that pipe. And so it's a massive, very expensive machine, costs $1 million to run that pig testing through the pipeline, but really glad that they're doing that on a regular basis and making sure that those pipelines that are running through our state are as safe as possible and operated in as safe a manner as possible. That's it for me.
Thank you, Commissioner. Okay, we have a few items on consent. I would move passage of the consent items.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Since none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
All right, thank you, Daryl. We'll move to the regular scheduled agenda, item BK1. I move the Commission adopt the order certifying use of federal universal service support for rural eligible telecommunication carriers to receive federal universal service funding in 2014, case number PU 13-333.
Second.
Section 254E of the Telecom Act of 96 requires that telecommunication carriers use universal service support only for the provisions, maintenance, and upgrading facilities and service for which support is intended. In May of 2001, the FCC basically requires that each state public utility authority receive an annual certification from each individual company to be filed with the FCC, ensuring they're using those funds only in the manner that's intended. In August of 2002, the Public Service Commission of North Dakota indicated that any telecommunication carrier providing these services has to file to this commission by September of each year that they're using the funds in a manner which intended. So basically what we have is we have 42 different companies that have certified that they're using the funds in a manner that that it is so designated for. And this order today basically just certifies that, and then we'll be forwarding this on to the FCC.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion?
I would just like to add to this. I think that this is the first time we've seen this order and really engaged in this particular piece of work that the commission is required to do. I think it's a fairly important area for us because we're evaluating how the companies are using those universal service funds and certifying that they're being used for the purposes originally intended, which is to serve underserved areas. I have no reason to believe that they aren't doing that, and I think they're certifying that they are. But it strikes me as this is a tool that the commission might use a little more strongly in the future to evaluate how evaluate any gaps that might exist in service areas, and as a conversation piece with customers or with the companies to say, you know, are you serving? Where are your gaps in your service area? You know, the whole zap the gap. Where are your gaps, and how might you be using these dollars to eliminate those gaps? So I'm not saying this time around, but down the road, I would like to see the commission sort of looking into that piece, using this as a tool to talk through with companies to identify if there isn't anything more that can be done using these universal service funds to improve the coverage in the rural areas throughout the state.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Thank you, Darrell. Item BK2. I move the commission issue a notice of opportunity for hearing concerning Nexus Communication Inc.'s amended application to be designated as an eligible carrier throughout the entire state, including tribal areas, for the purpose of receiving federal universal service support for Lifeline Services, case number PU 13-98.
Second.
In February of this year, Nexus Company, a privately held company under Ohio law and headquartered in Columbus, Ohio, filed an application to be designated as an ETC for the purpose of receiving federal universal service support for low-income consumers under the appropriate law. On October 9th of this year, the Commission approved the application of Nexus as a Lifeline-only ETC in the areas basically served by Quest Corporation, SRT Communications, excluding tribal lands. And since that time, they've filed again. They now want to serve the entire state, including tribal lands. So what this order does today is basically we set forward that comments and requests for hearing must be received by January 17th of 2014. So they already have approval to serve part of the state. Now they're requesting to serve the entire state. So quite honestly, when we had the informal with Nexus, of all the ETCs that I've seen, Nexus Communications seems like they've got a pretty good operation, and they actually, I think, will be actually having a storefront in North Dakota, it may turn out. So I look forward to the hearing. And I should point out, too, that all three of us, Commissioner Fedorchak, myself, and Commissioner Christman, participated in the North Dakota Telecommunications Conference that took place at the Ramcota that's goes till noon today. A lot of great speakers, a lot of great topics, but USF reform going forward, making sure that the funds that are only used for things they're supposed to be is taking place, what the amount of the USF dollars is going to be in the future, different state congressmen and women are putting in different rules, but this whole USF reform about what this dollar amount will be in the future and how it may impact companies was a big topic of discussion. So a little bit more than this motion talks about today, but the backdrop here is that USF reform is a big topic now, and it will be a big topic for the future for, I think, several years to come until they get this sorted out.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
All right. Thank you, Darrell. That includes the items in my portfolio. Commissioner Christman.
Mr. Chairman, I move the commission approve bond release number 4 for surface coal mining permit NAFK-8705 held by the Falkirk Mining Company to release all remaining reclamation liabilities on 40.1 acres of land located in the east half of the northeast quarter of Section 1, Township 145 North, Range 83 West in McLean County. No monetary release is being requested since the current bond amount is based on a worst-case reclamation condition at the Falkirk Mine. This release will become effective January 6th of 2014 unless a formal hearing is requested.
Second.
On October 31st of 2012, the Falkirk Mining Company filed the application for bond release of all remaining reclamation liabilities on these just over 40 acres. The bond release request contains 20.3 acres of reclaimed cropland, 2.7 acres of reclaimed public roads, and 17.1 acres of undisturbed land. Mining disturbance was initiated on this tract, interestingly, in 1979, and the coal removal was completed in 1981. Falkirk included data in the bond release application demonstrating that the actual yields exceeded the climatically adjusted standard for 2 years, as is required. The bond release application also contained correspondence from McLean County Superintendent of Highways, Ronald Wagner, indicating that the county's satisfaction with constructed County Road 16, which is located on the north side of this tract. There were no pre-mine water supplies were affected by mining-related activities, and the Reclamation Division concludes that there was not material damage to the hydrological balance off permit due to the mining and reclamation activities on these tracts. Existing groundwater monitoring wells located on the east edge of the bond release tract will be retained for continued observations as part of the mine-wide ground monitoring plan. The surface owners, the McLean County commissioners, and several state and federal agency reps were invited to participate in the final bond release inspection. The wheat crop looked healthy and not deficient of nutrients or lacking oxygen due to overly wet soils. There was no significant compaction was noted on the readings. The readings were similar to those from the undisturbed tract. The reclamation road associated with the bond release appeared to be in good condition and functioning as needed. The disturbed areas were soil probed to verify topsoil and subsoil respread thickness before first and second stage bond release was previously approved for part of the bond release tract, and they were found to be acceptable. The topsoil thickness on tract C was checked at several locations during the bond release inspection and also found to be acceptable. And finally, as far as the money on the bond, Falkirk did not release any reduction in the bond amount since this area is currently covered by a worst-case reclamation condition that still exists at the mine. This area is part of a consolidated bond area that includes most permits at the Falkirk mine. If bond release number 4 is approved, Falkirk will be released of all remaining reclamation liabilities on these 40.1 acres. The bond release will become effective, as I said in the motion, of January 6th, and our jurisdiction over these 40.1 acres will end once the release becomes effective.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
RC number 2, I move the commission approve bond release number 5 for surface coal mining permit NAFK-8705 held by the Falkirk Mining Company to release all reclamation liabilities on 137.6 acres of land located in a portion of Section 20, Township 146 North, Range 82 West in McLean County. Again, no monetary release is being requested since the current bond amount is based on the worst-case reclamation condition at the Falkirk Mine. This release will also become effective January 6, 2014, unless a formal hearing is requested.
Second.
This one also was October 31st of 2012 when Falkirk Mining Company filed the application for bond release. As I said, it's 130.7 acres in this case, so about a little over three times as large as the other one. Of this, 130.7 acres is reclaimed cropland, and 6.9 acres is reclaimed public roads. The coal was mined on this tract beginning in 1982 and was completed in 1985. Back grilling and grading was completed in 1993. Soil respreading was completed in 1986 with topsoil thickness ranging from 10.5 to 18 inches. Falkirk included data on the bond release application demonstrating that the actual yield exceeded the climatically adjusted standard for 2 years again. It's just kind of interesting to point out that Falkirk, you know, how this takes a long period of time. And that's why I pointed out when the coal was actually mined, you know, they reclaim this land and get subsoil back and topsoil back. And on the farmland that's going to be cropped, they actually first plant it into alfalfa for hay for a number of years and then break that up and go into crop production. And there's years of crop production records. And it's, you know, it seems like it's taking forever to neighbors. And yet it's an important part of the process that we have all the data necessary to show that land is in fact good productive land again before we release the bond. So I just wanted to point that out. The bond release application also contains correspondence from the McLean County Superintendent of Highways, again indicating their satisfaction with the reconstructed township road that's located, in this case, on the south side of the tract. No water issues to be concerned about. Mr. Steve Hager, the son of the surface owners, participated in this inspection, and he did not express any concerns regarding this reclaimed land, and he is actively engaged in agriculture and farms this land. Since bond release number 5 contains some federal coal that was mined, OSM concurrence is required prior to final bond release approval. Mr. Harv Glow of the OSM Casper Field Office participated in the inspection, and he did not express any concerns with the reclamation on either tract. We received OSM concurrence regarding this bond release on November 4th of this year. The reclaimed areas were probed to verify topsoil and subsoil respread thickness by Dean Moss in August of 2000. The actual topsoil and subsoil respread thickness verified by the soil probing were similar to the approved respread thickness, and variations were within acceptable limits. Again, there's no request for a reduction in the bond for the same reasons as the other one. And the bond release, if there is no formal hearing requested, will be effective January 6th, as in the other case. And if that goes through, our jurisdiction over these 137.6 acres will end when that is released.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion?
I just wanted to add some comments on this motion. This is a small tract of land from a mining standpoint, but it's a noteworthy milestone. And it's really an example, I think, of how in North Dakota our mining companies and our energy producers are mining the resources, producing a valuable product for affordable, reliable energy, and then reclaiming the land and returning it to the health and productivity of its original state. It's really a great example of how we can do that and have the energy and the environmental stewardship at the same time. And I did a few calculations just in terms of the value of this, the product that was mined. And again, it's just a small tract, 120 acres is what I used for the calculation, which is what Jim said was probably the amount of actual land mined in this case. That 120 acres in this area, we estimated would have generated about 2.16 million tons of coal, which is enough coal to run the Coal Creek Station power plant for 5,400 hours or 225 days. So just from that small tract of mine or tract of land, you get enough resource to provide power to people for 225 days from the 600 megawatt power plant. So it's really a great success story. I commend our staff for seeing this through. It's a long process, decades in the making, but really I think in the end it's doing a great service to the citizens of our state.
Any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
RC3, I move the commission close out contract number 675-13 with B&C Concrete Pumping Incorporated and contract number 676-13 with Northeast Technical Services Incorporated for completion of work on the 2013 Beulah Zap Phase 14 AML project.
Second.
Commission entered into this contract with BNC Concrete Pumping for the drilling and pressurized grouting associated with the Beulah Zap phase. This contract was for drilling holes to locate underground mine voids and to fill them with pressurized grout, primarily along a county road north of Beulah. The original, by the way, this county road, though, is a paved county road that goes out to the plants, so it's a well-traveled, important piece of infrastructure. The original contract was for 6,000 feet of rotary drilling, 2,000 feet of casing, and pumping 7,000 cubic yards of grout into underground mine workings. The original contract amount was $951,500. The final totals were 6,106 feet of drilling, 2,551 feet of casing, and 7,119 cubic yards of grout. So they did do slightly more work than the contract called for, and the work was completed for a cost of $951,844.77, again, slightly more than the original contract. The commission's also contracted in this case with Northeast Technical Services for the material testing and other services related to the project. The contractor provided a person to collect grout samples and test the grout that was injected into the mine workings. The contract amount was $35,300. The work was completed for $36,240, again, slightly more than the original amount. Joan Briner supervised this work, and she determined that all work was completed in a satisfactory manner by both contractors. Final payment has been made to the contractors.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Chairman, RC4, I move the commission adopt an order in case number GE-13-864 granting the request of Wagner's LLC, doing business as Schaefer Seed Company of Oaks, North Dakota, to operate a 150,000 bushel grain warehouse at Norway Spur, North Dakota.
Second.
Wagner's LLC is doing business as Schaefer Seed Company of Oaks. There was a Schaefer Seed Company there for many years, I guess. And they filed a license application to operate this grain warehouse at Norway Spur, which I have to admit I had to look up and is right by Oaks. The facility has been licensed by the South Dakota Wheat Growers Association until 2006. When business was discontinued because the facility was sold to Schaefer Seed Company. Our statutory license requirements have been met, and staff recommends the request be approved.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion?
Just for the record, I'm in support of anything involving Norway. It's got to be good.
Except their hockey team when they play the U.S. team.
Yeah, true.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
RC5, I move the commission adopt an order in case number GE-13-865 canceling roving grain buyer license number 3011 issued to SK Food International Incorporated of Fargo, North Dakota, and ordering that all North Dakota roving grain buyer activities be discontinued effective December 31st of 2013.
Second.
SK Food International notified the commission that they will not purchase grain in North Dakota, and they asked that their roving grain buyer license be canceled effective at the end of the year, and staff recommends that the request be approved.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
And finally, RC6. I move the commission adopt an order in case number GE-13-866, canceling roving grain buyer license number 3181, issued to LD Commodities Portland, LLC, of Wilton, Connecticut, and ordering that all North Dakota roving grain buyer activities be discontinued effective the end of the year, December 31st, 2013.
Second.
LD Commodities notified the commission that they will not purchase grain in the state. They asked that their roving grain buyer license be canceled effective the end of the year. Staff recommends their request be approved. And I would just point out again that it's Wilton, Connecticut, and the official name, LL Commodities Portland, LLC. I questioned, does that mean they have a they're a roving grain buyer? And I was wondering, does that mean they have a facility of some type over at Portland by Mayville? Oh, sure. But I was told, no, that's the name doesn't come from that Portland. It's the Portland out west. So it, neither Portland nor Wilton have anything to do with the North Dakota communities in this case.
We have a motion, a second. Is there further discussion? Since you're none, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed, motion is approved.
That concludes my portfolio.
All right, thank you, Commissioner. Commissioner Fedorchak.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would like to request that we hold over JF1 until the next meeting. I have a little bit of additional work I'd like to do with legal, on work in consultation with legal on this before we bring it up for a motion.
Okay. The last time I requested to have something held over, Daryl pointed out to me that, was it Daryl, he said in Robert's Rules of Orders, we have to actually vote to hold it over?
Right.
But it is a professional courtesy the commission kind of evolved to. If somebody asked for it, we just kind of did it, but we probably should vote on it, and I would certainly support that if you want to do it.
Okay. Excellent.
So, Daryl, how do we vote that?
Okay, I would just let you entertain a motion that we hold over PU 12-192 for
190.
Or 190. That we hold that over. That's all you need to do on that.
Okay. I move that we hold over case number PU-12-19 till the next meeting.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
If I could just add, Commissioner, if you get your questions answered before the next meeting, I think we could hold a special meeting to vote on this. Because this one, I didn't have any particular concerns, but I certainly want you to have a chance that you can figure out what you want.
So. Yeah. JF2, I move the commission adopt the order reissuing certificate and permit in the joint application of One Oak Rockies Midstream LLC and One Oak Bakken Pipeline LLC to transfer certificate of corridor compatibility number 122 and route permit number 131 from One Oak Rockies Midstream LLC to One Oak Bakken Pipeline LLC in case number PU-13-738.
Second.
This is a corridor and route permit that was originally issued for the construction of 54.2 miles of 10-inch diameter pipeline from the tailgate of Garden Creek Gas Plant to a point on the North Dakota-Montana border and continuing to Riverview Rail Terminal in Richland County, Montana. On August 12th of this year, One Oak Rockies Midstream LLC and One Oak Bakken Pipeline LLC submitted a joint application for the transfer of these this corridor compatibility and route permit. We offered the public an opportunity to provide written comments or requests for a hearing. No comments or requests for a hearing were received. The issue to be considered are whether OBP, One Oak Bakken Pipeline, agrees and is able to comply with the terms and conditions of the first reissued, first amended corridor compatibility number 122 and the first reissued first amended route permit number 131 issued to One Oak Rockies Midstream. On October 28th, we received an affidavit from Roger Thorpe, Vice President of NGL Operations for One Oak Bakken Pipeline, stating that his company agrees to assume the rights and obligations of this corridor certificate compatibility number 122 and route permit number 131. So I hereby recommend we approve this.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Since you're none, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
My last item, I move the commission adopt the order reissuing certificate and permit in the joint application of One Oak Rockies Midstream LLC and One Oak Bakken Pipeline LLC to transfer certificate of corridor compatibility number 131 and route permit number 140 from One Oak Rockies Midstream LLC to One Oak Bakken Pipeline LLC, case number PU-13-737.
Second.
Is It's a similar matter to the first one. In this case, it's a 13-mile, 10.75-inch diameter pipeline in Williams County that transfers natural gas from the tailgate of State Line 1 and 2 gas processing plants near Williston, North Dakota, to a point on the North Dakota-Montana border, and then to the Riverview Rail Terminal in Richland County, Montana. On August 12th, Rockies Midstream LLC and One Oak Bakken Pipeline LLC submitted a joint application for the transfer of the certificate and route permit. We offered the public an opportunity to provide comments or requests for hearing. None were received. The notice stated the issues to be considered are whether One Oak Bakken Pipeline agrees and is able to comply with the terms and conditions of the corridor compatibility number 131 and route permit number 140 issued to One Oak Rockies Midstream, and whether the requested transfer is compatible with public interest. On October 28th, Roger Thorpe, Vice President of NGL Operations for One Oak Bakken Pipeline LLC, sent us an affidavit stating that his company agrees to assume the rights and obligations of this certificate of corridor compatibility number 131 and route permit number 140.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, just a point of clarification. I'm familiar with the motion, but actually it wasn't in my packet today. Was it in Esther? Did you have this one? So we're just curious where this one came from. Did you grab one on consent or something?
Oh, sorry. I guess is that the same? That was one from the last time. I'm not sure how I got that in my folder. I didn't just now notice the date.
Fair enough.
All right. Well, so, I guess that's one. Have we already done this one? Did we do this last time, Sarah? Seven. I think these are yours.
I was thinking one was still in process. I have to go. It's not on the agenda.
Yeah,
okay. Sorry, I got carried away.
So we should probably, how do we back out of this one administratively?
I would be willing to rescind my second.
We'd have to rescind your second.
Okay.
And then we just
regroup.
Regroup.
Okay, so you'll rescind your second?
Yes.
Okay. Do I rescind the motion?
And you rescind the motion.
I rescind this motion.
All right.
I think we already did it. Sorry.
It happens.
I'm not sure where that came from.
Okay.
Oh, God, in my folder.
So fun the first time, we were just going to do it again.
So it was so fun to read.
All right. Anything else, Commissioner?
And interesting to listen to, too.
A little with gusto, though. Okay.
That's it.
Okay. Just a couple of notes. This has been a busy week. We had the telephone conference that we were all attended, and each of us participated in different forums. On Monday, we had work sessions on ADPs for four different wind projects dealing with Xcel Energy, as well as the ADP for the natural gas generation plants that they have. I just report back from those work sessions that we're going to be having more work sessions. There was not a consensus among the commission on the four wind projects, and so there's been several questions that have been asked by the commissioners to staff, and we're waiting for those answers to come back, but I'm hopeful that we'll have some type of motion for the wind farms the next meeting. The natural gas plants is very similar. I think there was not consensus among the commission, but I sense that one, that if we can get some legal workings back from staff, we could maybe even have a vote on that as well this next session, the next meeting. And then for the rest of this week, this afternoon we have a informal, as well as several informals, three different informals. Then one with Total Call Mobile designating ET eligible carrier, two different from Otter Tail and MDU on transmission facility cost recovery rates. And on Thursday, we have more work sessions on Otter Tail's cost recovery, MDU's cost recovery for some of their tariffs they ride. Next week, we start out in Monday morning. We'll be in Kilder for a formal hearing on a Bakken Express LLC 16-inch crude oil pipeline through Dunn and Stark counties. Tuesday, we'll have the Lignite quarterly meeting at noon. And then Tuesday evening, the commission will be participating in a variety of public input sessions dealing with MDU's requested rate increase for their natural gas facilities. The input sessions, they'll be in the cities of, we'll be in Williston, we'll be in Bismarck, we'll be in Dickinson, we'll be in Minot, we'll be in Devil's Lake, we'll be in Jamestown. So the commissioners, during our administrative portion of the meeting today, will figure out who's going where. And on Wednesday at noon, we'll also have public input sessions for the same cases, the same locations, just a different time. So the public has a chance to go on Tuesday evening or Wednesday over lunch. And then Wednesday at 2 p.m., we'll be having a hearing in Dickinson dealing with two pipelines that will go with their Dakota Prairie refinery. These are jurisdictional pipelines, not by much. They're just a little bit over the 1 mile, but nevertheless, they still are over the 1 mile, so we'll be having hearings on that. The following week, Monday, December 16th, looking forward to a update from the aerial applicators. Everyone, I think, has been following the discussion we had about the wind farm in Courtenay. This actually was scheduled long before the Courtenay wind farm came to fruition. The aerial applicators are a concerned group. They're going to come in and tell us what their concerns are in a general nature. I don't believe we'll double check that we don't have any wind farms in front of us right now. If they are, we'll make sure we get those noticed for that meeting, too, just in case we wander into that discussion. But it should be a very busy next couple weeks, and we close out with our last meeting of the year, unless we hold a special one, on December 18th. And I believe that concludes the notes. Mr. Crispin, did I miss anything that you want to throw out there?
I think you covered it well.
Mr. Fedorchuk? Mm-hmm. All right, we'd be happy to try to answer any questions we can.
I'm just curious on the JF1. Can you talk about the concerns that you have or the thing that you need to have answered or done before you can move on that?
I'm just exploring with our staff. We had the hearing. This pipeline is in the ground and operating, and I don't have any real concerns about that. My concern is how do we handle effectively the potential violation that they had been operating this pipeline for a number of years without the permit. They voluntarily came to us, so I recognize that that's a good thing, that they voluntarily came before us and sought the route permit and the corridor certificate. But at the same time, I want to make sure that all the companies out there operating, and especially in the pipeline business, are aware of our rules, feel that they need to be aware of them themselves and follow the processes as prescribed by law. So I just wanted to talk through with staff about how we include that in the order, any of our concerns, and how do we move forward if we need to on any potential hearing or discussion about the violation.
So you really don't have a concern about Highland and what they did. It was maybe a mistake or whatever, but you want to make sure that this mistake is not repeated.
Correct. By other companies, most importantly. It was put in operation, I believe it was 2010, so a number of years.
There's always a lot of discussion about when something like this happens, and they're going to be adding different pumps and things like that, which clearly make it transmission. But one of the things that is in our conclusions in this order today, had we voted on it, was we have a conclusion that Highland's actions in constructing and operating the pipeline prior to complying with the Siting Act and siting rules were unintentional, were not willful as described in the appropriate code. So I think that's one of the things that we have as a finding, but I completely concur with Commissioner Fedorchuk if she wants to get more information to make sure that finding is supported, because this is not the first time that we've had a case we've cited a pipeline that's been in the ground. My actually first hearing as a commissioner in, I think, January of 2009, there was a line that was put in south of Stanley that sometimes the companies that come in and they just either don't know or they don't check. But I think it's incumbent upon us to make sure that these companies know what the rules are. And even part of our inspection programs, if we're out there and see something that is not right, to let us know. In this particular pipeline, if this one is approved, this will actually become commission jurisdictional for the inspections, because this will be an intrastate natural gas line. So that's one of the. This is one that clearly, once it goes into operation, if we get there, well, then our inspectors will include it in our next year's inspection plan. So.
Well,
I think this will.
Just to clarify, in this case, there isn't anything being added that changed this from one way to the other. It was originally constructed. It was jurisdictional from the get-go, and they just didn't realize it.
I thought they were going to add in a couple pump stations.
That's a different one. Okay. You're thinking of the one in Tioga. I know there's a lot to keep track of. So this one was jurisdictional from the beginning. They just realized it, came forward, wanted to do it right, get the route permit and the corridor certificate. And that's the process that we've gone through. We had the hearing and everything, and all looks fine. And it is operational as well. So I think now it's just a matter of how do we deal with the violation. and that's what I wanted a little bit more time to talk through with staff.
Fair enough.
And get it correctly in order and any additional proceedings that might be required. Significant. I think the law provides for $10,000, a fine up to $10,000 per day that they're in violation, maximum civil penalties. So clearly the legislature wanted and wants companies to go through the process of siting and getting their permits for these kinds of pipelines. And it's important, and I think it's really important that companies take this very seriously, and that's why I want to make sure that we're looking at this carefully and setting the right precedent in this case. I think it would be, I can't say yet, actually. I think we just need to talk through it a little bit. But the fact that they came forward themselves and wanted to go through the process correctly, we wouldn't have known about it if they hadn't done that. So that, in my mind, that says a lot about the company. And the law requires that the company be found to have willfully violated. I don't know that that's the case in this instance, that they willfully violated. And in order to have those types of fines, you'd have to prove that they willfully violated the law.
If I may ask a question about the informal hearing that happened, about, there were some concerns about both the wind farms and the natural gas potential turbines. Is that correct?
Speaking for myself, the first work session we had was on the wind farms, dealing with the ADPs on the power purchase agreements, as well as the ones that would be owned by Xcel Energy. And so there was how do I explain this one? There wasn't concurrence on all the projects. So what we need to figure out now is, I sense there was concurrence on the projects that dealt with the power purchase agreements, and then there was more questions that my colleagues were asking for on the ones that would potentially be owned by Xcel Energy. So what we're doing now is I'm working with staff to propose a draft order that I'm going to put forward, and I believe my colleagues are talking to staff about some of the questions that they have. So I'll be bringing forward a potential order, and then we'll see what the concerns are. So I can't speak for my colleagues about what their concerns were. I was fine with all four of the farms the way they are right now.
Would either of the other commissioners like to talk about their concerns?
On the wind farms specifically, I have a very serious concern when the company seeks to add 200 megawatts and ends up on a shopping spree that results in 750, I want to make sure before I start approving all these that there is in fact a benefit to the customers. They're going to have to pay for all this, and our advocacy staff felt more comfortable with the power purchase agreements than the owned ones as far as the long term good of the ratepayers, and. So I guess I'm just not quite there yet to approve all four of them in a block.
As for me, I think I have similar concerns about the balance of resources and the whole resource mix. In this case, the company has four projects. Two of them would be owned by the company, and two of them are power purchase agreements. The power purchase agreements I don't have concerns with, because those, it's clear what the customers will be paying, and it seems to be a very good price. So I think those would be beneficial to customers, and I would be supportive of those. On the owned resources, advocacy staff made some points, both here and staff, some of the interveners in Minnesota who's also reviewing these same purchases, had more concerns on the owned resources in terms of how you can be sure that those are going to be beneficial long term for the customer. And so I want staff to pursue some sort of ratepayer protection mechanism in the order that would allow ratepayers to benefit from projects that are more efficient than expected, but not be harmed if the projects become less efficient and more costly than originally anticipated. So those were my concerns that I expressed, and those are the kind of the areas that we're looking at, and staff is looking at moving forward prior to any approval. There's also just the general issue of there's three big cases with us right now with NSP, all of them sort of mixed together, have issues that aren't completely separate. And so it sort of makes sense to kind of move forward together down the path on some of these issues. And we have a work session tomorrow morning on the rate case. We had a work session earlier on the gas plant, the potential gas plant project in Hankinson. They all are interrelated in some respects. So,
And also one of the wind farms that NSP would ultimately end up owning, there's a transmission interconnection issue there too that's unresolved, and that leaves a lot of questions in my mind as to what the resolution of that will ultimately be.
On the natural gas plants, Dave, what I sensed was the commission, all three of us, had a strong desire to figure out a way to have XL Energy NSP build those plants in Hankinson to help enhance reliability. And what we have staff working on now is how well that would be legally supportable. And so I just sensed that those gas plants, there was a strong desire to figure out a way to get those built in North Dakota, but we were just exploring how far we could go on that.
Well, given the company's comments at the formal hearing or whatever it was last week, they don't seem to be real interested in. That's just my perception, that they didn't seem to be real interested in building the Hankinson plant.
What's interesting is the company filed the ADP requesting to build those plants in North Dakota. The commission didn't request it. They filed it. And when it came time for the hearing, they came in and basically testified against themselves. And our advocacy staff made a very compelling case about why we need those plants to enhance reliability in the North Dakota region. And it also came out during the hearing that of all the states that XL serves, North Dakota is the only state that they don't own generation. So those were a couple things that really came out very clear in the hearing. So staff is working hard to see exactly what we can put in the order. But also on that one, it does come back to you've got wind farms that are going to have some type of generation. These natural gas plants will have some type of generation. The rate case is dealing with generation they've already built and how we're going to deal with other issues. So I'm hopeful we can wrap up all these XL things in the next couple of months for sure, because it's a lot of issues out there right now that need to get worked through.
As a little additional background on on the process, because it is very confusing how all these projects work their way through various commissions. The ADP for the Hankinson project, and they have another gas plant conversion of a coal facility, Black Dog, in Minnesota. Those two came to North Dakota. They also were presented in Minnesota for approval. The Minnesota requirement is that other projects get to competitively bid against what the company offers, and it's in private, so the company can't really see those to make their bid better, to make their project better. So they put together their project plans, the company does, and then other competing generators can make competing proposals, and then the commission decides what's the best ultimate decision for the company to pursue for its electric customers. That process is moving forward in Minnesota, and actually, I think for the first time ever, the advocacy staff on North Dakota intervened in that process and provided comments arguing for the Hankinson project, because we feel that's very important in North Dakota, and advocacy staff views that as important as well. So you might take a peek at those comments. It's kind of interesting to see what was provided on behalf of North Dakota consumers on that Minnesota case to try to get the Minnesota Commission to consider some of these other broader issues of the NSP's, operations on a regional basis, and why there's some important reasons why those Hankinson projects are valuable in North Dakota. Ultimately, the cost difference between what NSP ended up arguing for, which Brian said, they argued against their own proposal, they ended up choosing a different project in Minnesota to argue for on at the commission because it was like less than $500,000 less in cost over the Hankinson proposal. So we told them in no uncertain terms that it was very disappointing that they didn't advocate for their original proposal when they went before the commission in Minnesota. And that remains my greatest concern of the whole thing.
So and it's
I find it very interesting just in, whenever we have a discussion regarding the Minnesota Commission and Minnesota government in general, they demand more and more and more renewables. But to the extent that the utilities need some fossil fuel generation, they just do everything they can to insist that it be placed right down there by the biggest area of population and not over here where we have an area that is a long distance from any generation. And so it's interesting how they seem to not want fossil fuel generation, but when something's going to be built, they want it there.
Will I be able to find the comments on the Public Service Commission website, or do I have to go to the PUC website in Minnesota?
I'm not sure.
Do Our we comments, have Dave?
Minnesota?
Our comments that we filed in Minnesota?
Yeah.
We can get those to you. Mike would have those, and he could get those. Where's Sarah, can you follow through with Mike and get those to all three of the gentlemen?
And you'll be glad to know that it's not that long. It isn't a 35-page brief.
Well, and it's just you look at the efficient uses of resources. When Xcel, they made a big deal about building those two plants in Hankinson. So here we've got this opportunity for some good generation in southeast North Dakota. We've got this natural gas that's being flared throughout the state that until you build more pipelines and have a use for this gas, the flaring is going to continue. So it seems like just a good scenario all the way around. You build some gas plants in southeast North Dakota, you utilize the existing natural gas resources in the state, you provide electricity that you have generation in the western part of Xcel's service area. It just seems like it makes good sense all around. I mean, I made my comments very clear, as I think did my colleagues, that they want these plants to be built in North Dakota. We're just trying to figure out the best way to get our order such that we can make sure that that happens.
Let me see here. They came forward. They filed an application for the corridor certificate and route permit on January 31st of 2013.
Where was that route permit?
Let's see. If I could get you a map. It's out by Williston. Let me pull up the map here. Sorry, Nick. These pipelines are kind of running together. Here we go. Looks like it's right near west of Powers Lake. And it runs from the Norse gas plant to above WBI tie-in. The Norse gas plant to the WBI, it ties into the WBI pipeline. It is
6 miles.
6.5 miles.
So when you went to, or were you going to go look at the pig, did you have to get permission of the Agriculture Department? I'm just kidding.
They originally named them pigs because they squeal when they go through the lines. In fact, they notify the neighbors. They notify all the landowners that this is happening because it's so loud when it's going through the pipe that they're afraid that they'd wonder what was passing them underground.
I thought it was pipe inspection gauge.
That was a, what did they call it? It was an acronym developed after the fact.
Backronym.
They called it a pig because it squealed, and then they gave it the name that actually makes sense.
But it's not a pork barrel project.
All right.
And
Sorry, Nick has one more question.
I would consider it uncommon. I would consider it uncommon. I mean, it's happened before. Well, given the amount of pipelines that we're involved in, this doesn't happen very often. I'm looking over to Lon, I can only think of a couple times. This is the second one, I think, that I've dealt with in 5 years. But once is, you know, too much, back to Julie's point about we want to make sure we're citing these things properly.
And it didn't appear. We did the hearing. We had, you know, went out to the community. There were no problems with this that we unveiled in terms of how it was constructed, how it was reclaimed. Everything seems in order.
Even though it wasn't jurisdictional to the commission, there are still many standards they have to follow and rules, especially for a natural gas line.
It was jurisdictional, though. This one was jurisdictional.
Even though we didn't
still want to get that right, confused.
Even though the commission didn't initially cite it.
Yes.
There are still many, many rules and standards that they have to follow, particularly stringent upon natural gas pipelines. Good point.
And we were supposed to have cited it.
Agreed. All right, Nick, anything else?
I'm still with that.
I'm going to turn to Jim Deutschot to answer that for you better than I can.
So 140 acres, that's right left of under. The other 40 acre one, that's pretty much fixed. Just a mile and a half over there.
Mike, did you have anything for us?
All right. Mr. Chairman, I would point out that the Norse gas plant in the Highland crude case and the Norway spur in the grain warehouse case have nothing to do with one another. They're probably over 300 miles apart. So.
All right.
Are enough. They related to the Norse West Fest?
That's right in between.
All right, we digress. Going once, going twice. Dave, Nick, Mike. All right, we'll go ahead and close the official portion of our meeting, and we'll reconvene at, let's go 10 after 11 for our administrative portion of our meeting. Thank you.